Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Well, here we are on a delayed version of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, recording a little bit later than what we usually do. No, not because we're depressed over the Ravens' loss on Saturday. It's because there is a new national champion in college football, and that happened to fall on a Monday.
Yeah, and I mean, given the fact we are 72 hours removed since the Ravens' final game of a 2015 postseason, which many people didn't think they would have made it as far as they did or have been as competitive as they have been. But needless to say, though, yes, congratulations to the Ohio State Buckeyes, who went through not one, not two, but three starting quarterbacks to get to the national championship, the first four-team tournament for the national championship.
That seems to be a recurring theme, though. Teams getting to places that nobody expected them to get to. And that includes the Baltimore Ravens, and that especially includes the Ohio State Buckeyes, who after losing Braxton Miller in preseason and then losing to Virginia Tech just the second week of the season with a freshman quarterback in JT Barrett, everyone was thinking, how is this team going to survive? And then, no, we could just pretty much write this off as a rebuilding year. They get a pass, just like Randy Etzel got a pass for having a linebacker at quarterback 1 year. But nope, they righted the ship. They beat Michigan State. Then they handled Wisconsin in the Big Ten title. Then handled Alabama, and then handled Oregon.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
That is just a crazy ride of occurring events right there
You have to think about it this way. Cardale Jones, in his first three starts as a career in college,
all championship games.
Won the Big Ten title.
Championship.
Won the Sugar Bowl.
Championship.
Won the national championship.
Big championship.
Championship.
Championship Cardale.
Championships all around.
Cardale championship. This is why we got to get shirts made, Ray.
Yeah, this is the same guy who put out. Why are we going to class for this? We don't play school. We play football.
Yeah,
I just came to that realization though this morning, just listening to all the reactions about the national championship and seeing that Cardale Jones was the one who said that. I was like, he was the one who did that. That's pretty amazing considering, you know, the journey that he went through and having to see two quarterbacks go down in front of him. It was quite remarkable to say the least. But what we're talking about on today's show is obviously we're going to be talking Ravens and Patriots. That's going to be the headline news, reactions about that, the fallout, so to speak. What is the state of the Ravens? Well, I don't know.
It's a positive state. Let's just put it that way.
Spoiler alert. It's a positive state because, as we've mentioned, nobody expected the Ravens to get this far, considering everything that they've dealt with this season. We're going to be talking national championship, Ohio State versus Oregon. Oregon, thanks for playing. And then, let's see. The Orioles made a signing this week.
Really?
Yes, they did.
Really?
Yes, stay tuned for more on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Also, Maryland Terrapins continue their success in the Big Ten, although they had a little bit of a bump in the road last week.
More of a road bump in Illinois.
Yeah, so. I just said that. It was a bump in the road.
Yeah, a bump in the road.
Or a road bump.
In Illinois.
Yeah, it's kind of like a possessive way of saying things. Plus, we have our two-minute rant, so without further ado, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can listen to on
sfmsports.net. Am I doing this now?
Yeah, I'm gonna quiz you and see how good you are. And you can follow us on Facebook
at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All podcast.
And what is our Twitter feed?
BSportsFree, the number 4 all.
Yes, and your blog.
My blog is normally Monday Sports Mornings with Josh, but because it is so sporadic in its scheduling, we may have to move it to Sunday nights, although I have to give it a nifty creative name that hasn't been used on Google yet. That is Google-friendly. But needless to say, it will still be up on Blogger or Google. Either way, it's the same thing.
Keywords. It's all about keywords in your title and how much people want to look up those keywords. If you're talking about the Baltimore Ravens, put the Baltimore Ravens in your title.
Got to do hashtags now. Hashtags are big. They attract attention.
Then there's also regular tags.
Regular tags.
If you're on YouTube annotations.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, talk about your YouTube channel.
That's Sleepy Bear Canoe Gaming.
I was going to call it Sleepy Canoe Bear.
But Sleepy Canoe Bear.
Sleepy Bear Canoe Gaming, and you guys have reached 100 likes on your Facebook, so congratulations.
In less than
on that.
2 weeks.
Baby steps,
yeah,
man.
In less than 2 weeks, half the people are people we don't even know, so that's a plus.
By the way, when am I going to be invited as a special guest on the show?
You can come on whenever you want to. I mean, come on, we're playing Super Smash Brothers.
I feel left out.
We have 8-player Smash once in a while. Come on, man. The more the merrier.
Speaking of video games, my roommate and his girlfriend, this past weekend, they went out on a ski trip. And I kind of fooled around on his Xbox One for a little bit, played some of his games online, and a game I was playing was Grand Theft Auto V. I gotta tell you this, and this is so discouraging, I suck at video games now, and I've taken like a 4-year layoff from games.
Yeah, I mean, considering your PlayStation 3 has been on the fritz for how long?
Well, I don't even, that's been long gone. That's been long gone. I'm just waiting for the tax refund. By the way, tax season's coming up, so folks, you got to take care of those taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I owe this year, so I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, so hopefully I get a PlayStation 4 someday, but in the meantime, yeah, I'm trying to get back into fix of playing video games, even though it hasn't been a part of my life like it used to.
Okay, how about this? We just reached 500 likes on our Facebook page on the Baltimore Sports Free For All podcast.
Getting near 600.
So if we get 600 likes, Josh will buy a PS4.
No!
Okay.
Stop!
1,600 likes, Josh will buy a PS4. Shooting for the stars here.
I'll buy a PS4 game, maybe two games.
You'll buy the games before the system? How lame is that?
I mean, if you already have the system, that helps.
Yeah, but if you buy the games before the system, who does that? You get them in bundles, but that's about
why
it.
I can't wait for Oriole season, folks, so we have more giveaways like that. Those were much more fun.
Pitchers and catchers report in about,
in February.
Yes, they do.
We'll just say in February. But, yeah, I mean, even though we are going to start off with the end of the Baltimore Ravens season, and let me tell you, what a season. I mean, granted, at the beginning, things looked dire in terms of off-the-field news, but as the season progressed and you had some bumps in the road and had some resurgent weeks, needless to say, even though you lost 35-31 against the number one seed New England Patriots on the road, it was still a good season for the Baltimore Ravens.
Very much so, a very good season. You can also say, and I've been making parallels to the Baltimore Orioles, and I'm kind of going against my own advice here in paralleling baseball and football because they're two totally different beasts, two totally different sports, and yet here it is. They're very similar circumstances with the Baltimore Orioles and the Baltimore Ravens. Nobody expected the Orioles to go where they went to when they beat the Cy Young winners of the Detroit Tigers and got to where they, but the season ended abruptly with them with the Kansas City Royals. The same could be said about the Baltimore Ravens, who knocked off the Pittsburgh Steelers, winning for the first time in Heinz Field in the postseason. That's quite an accomplishment. They got that monkey off their back, but the one monkey they couldn't surpass was one Tom Brady and his constant bemoaning of the officials, so to speak. I mean, okay, we can talk about Brady's whining and bemoaning all we want. The guy wins
games.
He's
known for it. He's the on-field politician. I mean,
but he wins games, Josh.
Yeah, he wins. He's a winner. He wins games in September, October, November, December, and January.
Sometimes
February, but that hasn't happened.
Everybody likes to compare Manning and Brady because they are two of the best quarterbacks of our generation that we like watching going back and forward. But here's a key stat that differentiates the two. Tom Brady is going to his 9th championship game.
Yes.
4th straight, by the way.
Yep.
His 9th championship game. Peyton Manning has had 9 one-and-dones in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Including this year.
Yeah.
Boy, he looked like a shadow of his former self.
He was playing with a right quad strain, it looked like, according to reports. And now John Fox is out the door, and
maybe Gary Kubiak is in the door?
Well, even though Gary Kubiak has went on record and said, and that this, I guess this was positive news for the Ravens after the loss, was Gary Kubiak was considered staying with the Ravens because they were building something special with the offense. And also, you have to keep this in mind too, Ray. His last year as a head coach, he had health issues, and not so certain that even with a dream job like Denver, if Gary Kubiak wants to jump back into that saddle anytime soon.
I will say that Gary Kubiak gave the vote of confidence to Ravens fans in the press by saying that he's going to be back on as offensive coordinator, but that was before John Fox was outed in Denver.
Yeah. And by the way, John Elway, the he is the president of football operations there, correct?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he had the press conference earlier on Tuesday, basically saying, well, this is how he started off, and it was kind of a funny blunder. Well, before I start the press conference, I'd like to thank John Elway. I'm sorry, John Fox. And I'm like thinking to myself, wow, you are such a narcissist.
First of all, I'd like to thank the little people for letting this happen. It is all because of the little people.
I'd like to thank Josh Hall. I'm sorry, John Fox. Oh, man. But you'd have to think, though, John Fox is out the door. Peyton Manning looked mortal, maybe less than mortal. He looked like a 38-year-old quarterback going to 39. I do not foresee. It's weird. We may have seen Peyton throw his final pass in the NFL.
Well, it's easy to speculate about that, but remember, Peyton Manning is a pariah. He loves football. He'll stick around until his arm falls off. He'll be like he's like the opposite of Ray Lewis in terms of Ray Lewis was a defensive player who loved being on the field and loved football and loved the game until the day he dies. Peyton Manning is the same way on offense, and I think he's going to be able to have that until the day he dies. And dragging him kicking and screaming from the game is what you're going to have to get Peyton Manning. I mean, this guy, post-career, is set.
Yeah.
He can have any type of entertainment job he wants. He can do any type of acting he wants, any type of commercials. Broadcasting jobs are available for him. It just depends on who they want to fire. Let me see. He's got commercials at the Wazoo I mentioned. But at the same time, he may also have a football-related job coming after he retires, be it coaching.
Yeah, but going from a quarterback whose retirement is sort of rising from the sunrise to one quarterback who is going to turn 30 this season and still has plenty of years left, let's look at the Ravens' offensive numbers, because I'll be honest with you, Ray, if you have 428 total yards of offense on the road against the number one seeded team in the AFC, chances are you either got a lot of those yards in garbage time or you should have won the game.
We're going with the latter on this one, especially since they scored 31 points.
Absolutely. Joe Flacco completed 28 of his 45 passing attempts, which was a little bit under than what I would have expected in a game against Tom Brady. He had 292 yards. He had four passing touchdowns.
That's not under.
Three, which came in the first half. And two of his interceptions, unfortunately, came in the second half of the game, one in the third quarter against Devin McCourty. And the other was to a secondary player by the name of
Daron Harmon.
Daron Harmon. And you could say the first interception was Joe's fault. Because let's face it, you can't put the blame on every receiver that misses a route. But the second one, the one that Torrey Smith, the deep ball on the Ravens' two-minute drill against the Patriots in the fourth quarter, you could say Flacco should not have thrown it that deep, but at the same time, when your receiver going deep for the ball looks up and then all of a sudden just faces the secondary player, that is a telling sign that that receiver may have given up on that play.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you in the sense that that throw shouldn't have been made in the first place, because it's second down. It's over a minute left in the game. You're in opposing territory.
And they made a fourth and three play, and after that play, you should have been on a high in terms of confidence.
Yeah, and you didn't need that sense of urgency. You didn't have to be that desperate. I think Joe was looking at man-to-man coverage here, and he saw how Torrey Smith had his guy beat, but what he didn't see was Daron Harmon, who was reading Joe's eyes the entire way. Joe Flacco didn't see Daron Harmon because his eyes were fixated on Torrey Smith so much that Harmon knew he was throwing to Smith and easily closed the gap in the man-to-man coverage. They were playing two deep safety, and he just went over there where he was supposed to be and intercepted the ball from Torrey Smith. And yeah, Torrey Smith maybe should have put more of an effort there. That throw shouldn't have been made in the first place. Let's be honest here.
And also, we have to give credit to both sides too. If you're going to give credit to Daron Harmon, you also have to give credit to Belichick and his coaching staff for making those adjustments in the second half defensively. We got to keep in mind, Bill Belichick is a defensive mastermind.
That he is, and Tom Brady is an offensive mastermind, and it just seems like the New England Patriots find some way, some weird finicky way, to win in the playoffs. We all remember the Tuck rule in 2001 against the Oakland Raiders, and everyone's like saying, the Tuck rule? What the hell is that, the Tuck rule? And sure enough, yeah, that is an actual rule in the NFL to where if he throws the ball and tucks it in, that still counts as a incomplete pass.
Yep, 33 for 50 for Tom Brady, 367 yards, three touchdowns, one interception. One of that interception went to linebacker Daryl Smith, who in his second postseason game with the Baltimore Ravens is playing out of his age range and is showing some Pro Bowl level play. But needless to say, though, Tom Brady was still sacked twice for 10 yards, but still posted a better quarterback rating than Joe Flacco, 99.3 to Flacco's 92.1. So if you're a casual NFL fan watching this game, you got your money's worth out of these two quarterbacks right here.
Yeah, I mean, if you had no vested interest in either of these teams, this was a fantastic game because it was just back and forth. It was everything you wanted a playoff game to be. Except for the fact it wasn't snowing, Josh. It should have snowed in Foxborough.
It was 18 degrees, though.
It was 18 degrees in Foxborough, but this game would have been a lot better if it was snowing on the ground. But I digress. Ah, the Patriots. How about Julian Edelman, that 51-yard bomb that he threw? And that 51-yard bomb that he threw to Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
We remember Arian Foster's throw in the Texans game against the Ravens, how the thing was end over end. It looked like a really bad throw that could be made by a middle schooler. Julian Edelman's was spot on and just completely there.
He's got an arm on him, too.
Yeah, the secondary had absolutely no match for that play. And speaking of all of that, the trickery, well, quote-unquote trickery, that was employed by the New England Patriots in terms of having ineligible receivers on the field and then putting them back on and off. And John Harbaugh after the game claiming that, yeah, it was definitely deception. And Brady coming back was saying rule book and everything. It was that's just how they find weird gimmicky ways to win a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the Edelman passed a 51-yard bomb, and it's crazy that he had a better quarterback rating than both Flacco and Tom Brady.
Well, he only threw one pass, Josh.
I know, small sample size, but still you have to give credit where credit is due. It was a fantastic play.
I mean, they don't count stats up to a certain point unless you have a certain number of attempts.
And you also have to, while you give credit to the offensive creativity by Josh McDaniel, you also have to give less credit to the Ravens' lapse in judgment. Is it lapse in judgment. I had a lapse in pronouncing that. Yeah, a lapse in judgment defensively against Edelman's pass. And this game was just won overall by New England's receiving core. And, you know, compared to the Ravens' receiving core, Joe Flacco did more than his share in spreading the ball around. He spread the ball to 10 receivers. Brady only needed 7 receivers. Yes. And by the way, 3 or 4 out of those 7 receivers had 60 yards or more. There was only one player that the Ravens had that had over 60 yards receiving.
The and one you said quit on that last pass.
Torrey Smith.
Torrey Smith did, yes.
And also Torrey Smith was involved in the final play of the game for the Ravens where Flacco threw the deep ball, once again possessing that arm strength that he has as an attribute. The ball reached into the end zone, and once it got out and popped up, you thought maybe, just maybe, somebody's going to catch that ball, a la A.J. Green back in 2013 at M&T Bank Stadium, but it didn't happen. It was in Torrey Smith's vicinity, and it wasn't caught. That was the game.
Well, not only that, but I think it was one of the defensive backs tipped it out of the end zone. That's the old adage. What do? You knock it down. And he knocked it down out of the end zone to prevent a free catch. So in case anybody did catch the ball, it would be at the 1 yard line being ready to be swarmed by all defensive backs that were there to catch that Hail Mary. Now, I'm looking at another key stat for the New England Patriots. The rushing game?
Yeah, their rushing game was horrible. And this is what befuddled me about the game.
14 yards, Josh.
You knew they were going to throw the ball. Tom Brady, 51 passing attempts by the Patriots compared to their 13 carries in the rushing attack. The rush defense was awesome for the Baltimore Ravens. You look at the lineup up front, Nada, you look at Jernigan, Brandon Williams. These guys did their part in stuffing those running backs, except for Tom Brady, who scored a rushing touchdown on a 4-yard play.
But even then, he
that was the slowest 4-yard run I've ever seen by anybody.
But even then, he still had 0 yards per carry because he had 6 other attempts and 0 yards to net out of it. And you're just looking at the stat line, okay, 14 rushing yards, 50 pass attempts. That should be a losing effort by that team. That should be somebody who's just wheeling and dealing and gunning and chucking and just getting everything and just throwing up prayers all the time. No, it was the New England Patriots that won this game. The stats are very, very deceiving in this game, and that's exactly what happened, is that Tom Brady was exploiting the weak secondary of the Ravens. It finally got the better of them. Yep. And unfortunately, it came at the wrong time, and now Baltimore is sitting at home. John Harbaugh is going to be coaching the Pro Bowl, though.
Yeah, but only a few people are probably going to watch that. But hey, Peyton Manning may not even play in the Pro Bowl, so at least that frees a quarterback spot up. Maybe this is Joe Flacco's time.
Hey, the Pro Bowl is more higher rated than a movie on Hallmark. I mean, that says something.
That does say a lot. That absolutely says a lot. It probably would be higher rated than a NASCAR race, unless it's a Daytona 500, and of course everybody's watching.
Yeah, the
watching
Daytona 500, everybody's watching that, but then they don't even remember like the last race of the chase for the cup. What is it, like the Pepsi 400? The Pocono 400?
Somewhere around there. Oh, by the way, another key stat before we move on. The Patriots had 2 fumbles that weren't turned over to the Baltimore Ravens defense. One by Julian Edelman and one by Danny Amendola. Just think, Ray, you had all those pass attempts by the Patriots. You had those rushing yards that just seemed dismal against the Ravens defense. Had those 2 fumbles been turned over to the Ravens defense, you and I here on this episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, we could be talking about a 4th AFC Championship appearance for Harbaugh and company. But because they weren't opportunistic, because it may have been Flacco or Smith's fault in this game, of course, we're not totally putting all the blame on them.
It's a team effort, Josh.
Rashawn Melvin, I guess you could say, maybe partially his fault because he was defending the left side of the field, which Brady was dominating the entire game. It just was not the Ravens' day. It wasn't their year.
Or the fact that they were decimated by injuries.
Yeah.
It was that. It wasn't because they lost Ray Rice at running back, because Justin Forsett, 24 carries, 129 yards, continues to be what Justin Forsett is. Now going to be a free agent, so it's interesting to see where he ends up. And there's a bunch of questions that need to be answered with this Ravens team in the offseason. We'll get to those questions on next week's episode. We're trying to keep the Ravens talk a little fresh, spread it out a little bit, and keep it a little bit more so until eventually there's really nothing to talk about in the offseason unless somebody gets in trouble in an elevator again at Atlantic City Casino.
Yeah.
I'm going on a tangent here, aren't I?
And by the way, now that we are mentioning what we'll be talking about over the next several weeks as the news progresses, because that's just the way the NFL is. News seems to be more week to week now compared to month. Because, you know, you have the 24/7 news cycle, the NFL Network. It's a blessing in disguise for us at Talk Sports.
Yeah, the NFL wants to keep themselves going 24/7, 365.
By the way, just a little hint at what we'll be talking about in terms of free agency, because I think we will be talking impending free agents next year. But I just want to talk real quick about a guy who still has 1 year on his contract. Do you know how much of a cap hit Haloti Ngata is in 2015?
It's going to be quite significant, actually.
$16 million hit.
And that is actually the bigger hit out of anybody on this team, even bigger than Joe Flacco's extraordinary contract that he signed after winning a Super Bowl that he celebrated by ordering chicken nuggets at McDonald's. I still can't get over that.
I still think he got those for free, though. He was in that commercial. You got to remember that.
I don't even think did anybody. I still got to remember. Did anybody? No, he got for Mighty Wings, not McNuggets.
Yeah.
But did any? I can't remember if anybody recognized him or not in that drive-thru.
I don't know. Unless you don't watch football at all and don't watch the Super Bowl, I don't know how you don't recognize.
Although it's
the guy.
Tough because at the old radio station that I used to work at, we did appearances and live show on locations at a car dealership in White Marsh. And I do remember that when they announced that Joe Flacco was coming, all of a sudden we were getting swarmed with people. I didn't think that many people could fit in a car dealership. They were definitely violating a fire code there by having that many people in one building at the same time.
Well, moving from Ravens pro football to collegiate football, more namely the last game of the collegiate football season, or the college football playoff national championship game presented by AT&T, because you do have to throw in the sponsors there.
But that's just weird that it was presented by AT&T when it was in AT&T Stadium. I mean, didn't they have enough sponsorship right there just having the stadium rights that the national championship was playing in, Jerryland?
Yeah, unfortunately, Jerryland was not of use in Green Bay. But
well, of course not, because they were playing in Green Bay.
Yeah, but he does seem to have unlimited power in some spurts, but
including knuckling with Chris Christie, Governor Chris Christie, saying,
"Oh
hey,
yeah.
Come on, how weird of a sight is that?"
That was
it's
weird.
It's between that and the photos of Jerry Jones with strippers, and I think there was like a couple other things that he did this year that just creeped me out. I'm just like, man, Jerry Jones. What are you? Who are you?
Chris Christie looked like that guy who was cheesing up to his father-in-law because he won the lottery or something like that. And that's what the picture looked like. But anyway, enough about Chris Christie, enough about Jerryland. Moving on to the national championship.
Well, we're talking about a game in Jerryland, so we're still going to be talking about Jerryland.
Enough about Jerryland, okay? Enough.
Okay, so this is the national championship game played at... Insert stadium here.
Congratulations to the Ohio State Buckeyes winning 42-20 over the Oregon Ducks, who were the second seed in this 4-team playoff. Ohio State the fourth seed. And to me and Ray's, I guess, lack of judgment, we did not expect Ohio State to move any farther than their game against Alabama.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, though. What?
I mean, I was thinking to myself, did I pick Ohio State to beat Alabama? And the answer to that question was...
I don't think you said yes, though. You said that...
I didn't say a resounding no.
You didn't say a resounding no, but backup quarterbacks against one of the best teams in the nation, the best defenses in the nation, even though they whooped their butts. Yeah, I mean, we will give credit on that. But still, that was a lot of obstacles for Ohio State to overcome.
It was one of the more insane runs, and I know this is sensationalization of the immediacy here, but this was one of the more incredible runs I've seen in a sport, they don't get paid yet, but this is one of the more incredible runs I've seen in a sport to where you lose your main quarterback, you lose your quarterback that's been leading you throughout the entire season, a true freshman. He goes down in the final game of the regular season. Then you get the Big Ten championship. Guy makes his first career start, wins the Big Ten championship, goes on to the Sugar Bowl, wins that, then goes on to the national championship, wins that, and he could very well be an NFL quarterback, even though he says he's not ready just yet.
Well, that shows you the maturity on Cardale Jones's part right there, that he wants to evaluate his collegiate future. Because you got to remember, too, next football season, college football season, you're going to have Braxton Miller back, you're going to have JT Barrett back, you may have Cardale Jones back, and... unless there seems to be a transfer in student scholarships in terms of collegiate football, I really don't see Urban Meyer keeping those three in the same depth chart.
Especially considering that Braxton Miller, if he were to transfer, is eligible to play immediately.
Absolutely.
Now, so the quarterback question is one to be answered later on down the road because, let's just face it, it's still very fresh on the newsreels that Ohio State won the national championship, which... this cracks me up. The day after that Ohio State wins the national championship, it says, oh, well, AP has just released their final postseason rankings, and no surprise there, Ohio State is number one. Yeah, no kidding. They just won a national championship. Of course they're number one. Okay, maybe they want to like put TCU at number three, but people were expecting that, and by saying that, oh, maybe the college football playoff got that one wrong by putting Florida State in over TCU. But at the same time, though, postseason rankings at just the day after the national championship are redundant to me. I've watched this. I don't need to know where the teams are ranked because there's only one number one, and that is number four seed Ohio State.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this game a little bit and see what happened.
Yeah, let's talk about this game. I mean, you have the Heisman Trophy winner Marcus Mariota, who didn't necessarily have a bad game by any stretch of the means. He was 24 for 37, 333 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, and still rushed for an additional 39 yards on 10 carries. You could say he did his part for the Oregon Ducks. Same with receiver Byron Marshall, who had eight catches for 169 yards and one touchdown, including a 70-yard catch by Mariota. But you look over to the Ohio State side of things. Cardale Jones, 16 for 23, 242 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Now, before we look at Ezekiel Elliott's stats, the sophomore running back for Ohio State, before we look at his statistics, if I added up Mariota's stats, if I added up Byron Marshall's stats compared to Cardale Jones, before we move on to Ezekiel Elliott, you would have thought Cardale Jones lost this game for the Buckeyes. But luckily, they have Urban Meyer as their head coach. And because of that, and because they mixed the game plan up well, Ezekiel Elliott was the MVP of this game. 36 carries, 246 yards, averaged 6.8 yards per carry, 4 rushing touchdowns. Yeah. Just incredible.
Well, the fourth
one. And he's a sophomore.
The fourth one came in junk time.
Well, yeah, that was the unnecessary one. But needless to say, right?
Wasn't rubbing those in because Oregon's done it throughout the season. I mean, you don't want them rubbing in your face. Stop them.
Yeah. Comparing offenses here real quick. Mariota, Byron Marshall, both are juniors. Both are stellar players. Both may not even be back for their senior year. They may be both headed to the National Football League.
Especially Ezekiel Elliott, because he was getting comparisons to another Ohio State running back that had a lot of success in the NFL. That was one Eddie George.
Yeah, but because Ezekiel Elliott is a sophomore, I don't believe he's going anywhere. Same with Cardale Jones. Unless I could be wrong about that, unless Ezekiel Elliott was a redshirt sophomore. But needless to say, though, Ohio State is in great hands, especially with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer even was asked the question, will he be coaching in the National Football League? And he said no, at least not yet, which we got to ask this question here. Could Urban Meyer – well, actually, let's ask this here. Where does Urban Meyer stand on the spectrum of coaches overall, in your opinion?
As in terms of overall with not only professional but college coaches.
Yes.
So you're ranking him up there with Coach K. You're ranking him up there with Gary Williams. You're ranking him up there with Roy Williams.
Well, not necessarily basketball coaches.
Yeah, I think about with college as well. Well, obviously Nick Saban, because he along with Nick Saban, is the only coach in collegiate history to win a national championship with two different teams. Urban Meyer now has three national championships, two with Florida, one with Ohio State. And you were talking about his run to the NFL and if he were to coach at the NFL. I believe that his time to coach with the NFL was after his Florida run, because he was white hot in those national championships. Went to a third national championship with Florida, and that was the infamous Tebow crying picture that everybody put up, because people liked reveling in Tim Tebow. Everybody loved to hate Tim Tebow in college and loved him in the NFL. But at the same time, that was Urban Meyer's chance because of health issues, stepped down from Florida. But he could have easily came back and been in the NFL. But he's decided to go with his alma mater in Ohio State. So seeing that tells me that he wants to stay at Ohio State and wants to finish up his coaching career at the college that he oh so loves, and that is The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, and looking on social media this week, there were some people there who are Maryland Terrapin fans who were concerned that after Ohio State's dominance in the national championship game, they're like, well, I guess Maryland isn't going anywhere. I'm thinking to myself, this could quite possibly be the best thing that could happen in your conference.
Yeah, because it bolsters the Big Ten all of a sudden. Everybody now no longer has a slobbering love affair with the SEC. Now everybody's looking at the Big Ten and saying, this could be a pretty powerful football conference.
You know your benchmark. You know your benchmark and how to reach it, and it's in reaching distance.
Yes.
That's how you have to look at things, folks.
Yeah, because this only steps up your recruiting process as well. It says to yourself, we play at Maryland. You're closer to Maryland than you are in Ohio. We're going to be able to play the national champions on live TV. You will have exposure in that sense, and that will increase your recruiting power and overall improve the quality of just about every team in the Big Ten, because the SEC won a string of national championships, and because of that, everybody now wanted to flock to the SEC. Well, with this national championship, you might see a little bit of an influx to the Big Ten, and you could see a little bit of a balance of power shifting here, especially given the fact that there was no SEC team in the final two.
Now, let me ask you this as well. Do you believe that they should expand the college playoffs by, say...
Absolutely.
How many?
Move it to eight teams.
Eight teams?
Yeah, you have the five super conferences, the conference champions in the five super conferences, then you have three at-large bids, and it totally dilutes the argument because, yes, they got it right this year in the college football playoff, but there was a big stink over TCU, and if they would get in over Florida State or Ohio State.
And TCU looked dominant, too.
Yeah, they looked very dominant, and they showed it in their bowl game. And you can make the argument for TCU and if they should have been able to be in that playoff instead of Florida State, who got absolutely mollywopped by Oregon, who got mollywopped by Ohio State. It's a little bit of a chain of pattern here, if you're seeing, Josh. And it just reminds me of, I think it was 2006. You remember Michigan and Ohio State, that memorable game on the day of Bo Schembechler's death. I remember that game very clearly. It was close all the way to the end, and both teams were ranked number one, number two, respectively. Ohio State was one, Michigan was two. Number two lost to number one, but barely, and by like a field goal. People were arguing that there should have been a rematch in the national championship. It did not happen. Michigan ended up playing in a different bowl game. They got handled in that game. Yeah. And they were arguing even before that game that they should have been number two in the national championship playing a rematch against Ohio State. They didn't. And then what happened, they didn't take care of business. They got mollywopped. They proved that they didn't belong in the national championship. TCU this year proved that they belonged in that college football playoff, and they didn't get it because the argument there is, well, they lost to Baylor. Baylor was ranked above them. How can TCU be ranked above Baylor when Baylor was the better team than them?
I still am of the belief that there should be 32 teams in the tournament. I know, as asinine as that sounds, there are too many filler games in September that just bore college football fans to death. We're tired of seeing Alabama beat up Old Dominion 45-0, 45-3. We're tired of those games.
I'm tired of seeing Maryland versus the Citadel. What are
exactly.
you talking about?
Well, exactly. I want conference games right off the bat, right in September. And then once we reach December, have a 32-team tournament. You'll have the top 25 involved, of course, but you'll have seven more teams that won lesser conferences. Get the little guys involved, because it gives even the lesser schools, it gives them a chance to be relevant. It fills up the seats. It gets people excited.
Whoa, Josh. Contain the calamity that is your Mammaries right now. Because it took
Where
them...
Where did you hear that from?
It took them how long? It took them how long to get this four... To get four teams?
Too damn long.
How long did it take them to finally get rid of the BS that was the BCS and go to CFP, the College Football Playoff? How long did it take them to get to this stage? Baby steps, Josh. It will be four teams, then it will go eight teams. Well, we're going to see this four-team playoff for a couple years now. It's not going to automatically go to eight teams because they saw they had success with it this year. Yes, you still have the controversy with TCU, but it was still a decent talking point for them, and they showed, Condoleezza Rice included, that they got it right, and they had the best ratings they've ever had in a national championship game. This game was completely hyped, and everyone was looking at it as big time football, and you saw that Ohio State now goes down in history as the first team to win a college football playoff in Division 1A.
And as Maryland football knows, their benchmark is the now defending national champion Ohio State Buckeyes in the Big Ten. Both the Maryland men and women's team are kind of setting benchmarks of their own in their inaugural first year in the Big Ten.
But the women are ranked higher than the men right now.
Right, of course. But needless to say, they still have the same amount of losses.
Yeah, and I mean, the Terps, the Lady Terps, they beat Ohio State. They beat the football team national champions. They beat the women's basketball team in Ohio State. So you're telling me that that's a sexy win? I do believe so.
Well, looking at the Big Ten standings right now, the overall standings, Maryland is only second behind Wisconsin. Wisconsin is – actually, there are four teams tied for the top spot. Wisconsin is 3-1. Maryland's 3-1. Indiana's 3-1. They're 3-1. And Michigan State, the Michigan State team that most people seem to be writing off. I tell you, don't write off Tom Izzo. Don't write that team off. They're going to contend.
You can't write off Tom Izzo. I mean, yeah, they're having – you could say an off year, but they could turn it around just like that. And Maryland will be playing Michigan State again. They will also be playing Indiana. So,
yeah,
a key schedule coming up for the Terps. And you looked at their loss to the Fighting Illini. And
road game. It
was a road game. It was a tough road loss as well. Some people are calling it even, so to speak, an egg, if you will. And looking at that loss, but then how they rebounded against Purdue. And the thing about that Purdue game, they were in some serious, serious foul trouble.
Absolutely.
And they were able to overcome that, and they had a bunch of freshmen come in, and they were able to step up and play their game. We even saw how Des Wells may not be quite fully 100%, so to speak, but at the same time, they were able to take care of business. Let's see now what they do in the schedule coming up, because you've got Michigan State, and you've got...
don't forget Rutgers.
Rutgers you got to face. Rutgers is going to be next on the schedule, but like I said, looking forward to everybody else they're playing. Michigan State is one. Rutgers, I think they have they're ranked 327th in terms of offense, but still not to be taken lightly, because this is the Big Ten, and Rutgers has been kind of a force as a basketball program in the past.
You know, 10-7 start for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, but still, needless to say, there have been teams that have came into the Xfinity Center or Comcast Center, whatever you want to call it nowadays, against the Maryland Terrapins.
Coalfield House 2,
Gary Williams Court. So many names for that place, but Rutgers 10-7, 2-2 in the Big Ten. Maryland, of course, 15-2, the number 14th team in the country with a 3-1 Big Ten record. And when you go back to that Illinois loss, that 64-57 road loss against the Fighting Illini, Maryland's stats were very telling in this game, especially their free throw shooting. They only made 10 of 18 free throws. I know it's a road game, but still, that is very poor for a visiting team.
Whereas opposed in the Purdue game, it was the opposite. They were quite handy from the line, and it was the Boilermakers that were the ones that were pretty bad from the free throw line.
Jake Lehman was awesome in that game.
I think the Boilermakers, they had, 65% shooting from the free throw line, while Maryland only missed 4? I mean, when you make your free throws, that's the time you win the game. That stats will tell you. Like, now, of course, as we saw with the Ravens and Patriots game, stats can lie to you, as they did that they proved in that game. But at the same time, Maryland was able to handle business against Purdue. Let's see what they do against Rutgers in big game Saturday, January 17th, against Michigan State.
Yeah, Jake Lehman stepping up big for the Terps in that big Purdue win, the big road win against Purdue. He had 14 points. 8 rebounds. By the way, 3 of those 8 rebounds were offensive. That is a key stat right there. And also had 3 blocks and 2 steals defensively. So Jake Lehman providing the defense for the Terrapins. But yeah, you have the Scarlet Knights coming up out of Rutgers. You have Michigan State coming up and Indiana, correct? Those are your next 3 games?
That they are. And then Northwestern and Ohio State after that.
Yeah, so you're going to have some tough competition coming up for the Maryland Terrapins. But then again, These are the games that set you up big for the Big Ten tournament. These are games that set you up big for the national tournament. And the way the Terrapins are playing right now, I don't see any reason why they can't make the national tournament, unless they just have a complete collapse, which I do not foresee them happening.
A monumental collapse of epic proportions it would take, considering that you're 3-1 in the Big Ten right now as we speak, 15-2 overall. Yeah, how is it? What kind of a collapse are they going to have to not make the national champion? Not make the national tournament? I mean, come on, they're going dancing in March. There's no doubt about that.
I don't know. It always seems like it happened. It's always those too good to be true moments, I suppose, with the Terrapins, but then again, Turgeon does seem to have their heads on straight this time around. They have a great freshman in Melo Trimble, a very exciting player in Melo Trimble.
Yeah, and
Jake Lehman is providing the leadership there, too. I think they're in good hands.
Well, if they do collapse here at down the stretch, that would probably be Mark Turgeon being on a serious hot seat and on a short leash there.
I think he'd be fired.
Yeah. Somebody who's not on the hot seat, although Brenda Freese did have an awesome coaching chair at one point when she was pregnant, I think, with triplets. Yeah, so when Brenda Freese had that awesome chair, she's not on the hot seat. Let's talk a little bit about the Lady Terps, who currently are ranked 8th overall.
8th?
Yes.
In the nation.
Yeah, overall. That's pretty good for considering that program.
Talked about the men first?
Yeah. Why did we talk about the men first? We got to talk about the ladies right here. Come on.
I guess the men are surprised.
Josh, give the ladies some love here, okay? Not only that, over the last couple of years, they've had more success than the men did.
Ray, there's no crying in basketball, okay?
No, nobody cries in the Maryland Terps.
I know. I was using that Tom Hanks League of Their Own quote right there.
Well, that's baseball, but you know, some people would cry. I mean, Dwight Howard right now is crying after getting headbutt by Kevin Garnett. But
yeah,
I digress.
I would cry. I guess anybody would cry if you get headbutted there. But moving on to the Lady Terrapins, who recently have came off of a nice 77-73 road win over the number 23 Minnesota Gophers, the Golden Gophers. Yeah, so
at the Golden Globes.
At the Golden Globes. Yeah, but moving on. Wow, just lost my train of thought there with the
that's not good there, Josh.
That's not good at all.
We've got people that we've got to serve here.
Okay.
You were talking about how the Maryland Terrapins handle business against number 23 Minnesota.
See, you can't even get the ranking right.
That's because I got it half right. It was a Freudian slip. It was an honest mistake.
Well, I'm having a Freudian slip, too.
Well, look, Minnesota was ranked 23 overall. This game was on ESPN2, and it was 77-73. The Golden Gophers fell to the Maryland Terrapins, and now we see them on a little bit of a roll here lately, Josh.
Yeah, going back to their 77-73 win over the Minnesota Golden Gophers, the number 23 ranked. Of course, those rankings will change because we saw it with the Maryland Terrapin men's team. When you lose a Big Ten matchup, even if it's against an unranked team, you'll drop a few spots. But needless to say, though, Maryland, just the women, their spots have been improving in the rankings in the AP Top 25, the coaches poll. Lexi Brown, the sophomore guard, had 20 points, 7 assists, 4 steals against the Golden Gophers, which proved huge against that team. And looking at Maryland overall and just looking at the rankings in the women's top 25, you have, of course, South Carolina is now, wow, I did not see that coming. South Carolina is the number one team in the AP Top 25 women's basketball, not Connecticut, not UConn?
Yeah, you usually see UConn at the top there with Gina Auriemma.
And you used to see Tennessee up there, too, back when
Pat Summitt
was... Yeah.
That's just a sad story with her, by the way.
I know.
But yeah, Pat Summitt, Gina Auriemma, now you got...
Baylor's third, I'm not shocked about that. Baylor's always in the top three. Texas.
Yep.
Well, I'd say Texas and Louisville are tied for fourth. That's really weird, but they have the same amount of points. Tennessee, the Volunteers, find themselves in the sixth spot right there. Notre Dame, well, I'm not really shocked about these rankings, but I guess it's nice to see Maryland back in the top 10, back where they usually belonged back in the earlier days. This has shocked me more than anything.
You're at a loss for words that South Carolina is ranked number one in ladies basketball.
Wow. It seems like when we focus on one team every week, we lose sight of the big picture in terms of college sports, including the rankings, because normally when I go to the rankings, I expected Connecticut to be there because, let's face it, UConn has been on top of women's basketball for quite a long time. Auriemma is pretty much the head honcho in that sport, but not this year. That is incredible right there.
And you were talking about offensive rebounds being a key stat for the men. And against Minnesota, Maryland had 19 offensive rebounds.
And how many defensive rebounds did they have in addition to that?
I mean, let's go with 19 as of right now, because that's the telltale stat, because they scored 22 points off those rebounds as well, because their shooting percentage was terrible. It was like, what, 39.7?
39.7, that's correct. And also, looking at the remainder of their schedule, their next couple games, they will have a road matchup against the number 24 Rutgers Scarlet. You can't say Rutgers Scarlet Knights because it's ladies, right? So you have to say Scarlet Ladies.
Well, ladies can be knighted.
You know what? That is true. That is true. Okay, so the number 24 Lady Rutgers Scarlet Knights, they will have a road game against them. Then they will come back home on January 18th against the Fighting Illini. Then have another home game on January 22nd against the Michigan State Spartans. And next game will be a road game against Indiana Hoosiers. So, Maryland, they do have one tough test against Rutgers, the number 24 team. But before that, they're going to have those string of unranked teams. And then starting February 1st until February 10th, three of their next four opponents after that date are all going to be ranked in the top 25.
Okay, so you want to know what the female equivalent of a knight is in British honors?
Sure, tell me.
It's a dame.
So the Rutgers Scarlet Dames?
The Rutgers Scarlet Dames. And yeah, we look at Dame as like, hey, what's up with that Dame? What are you doing there, Dame? Yeah, yeah, come over here, sugar, give me some kiss. Yeah.
Are you talking like 1940s talk right there?
Hey, it's the 1940s, yeah. I like
what
do
they call it? Noir films? Is that what they called them?
Yeah, noir films. I was sitting there late at night just drinking some coffee.
She had ruby red lipstick. Her blonde hair was brighter than the sun.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. That's a different one. But no, no, no. A dame in terms of British honors is actually a very high prestige title to have, and is the equivalent of a knight. So there you go. That would be the Scarlet Dame, so to speak. I don't wonder if you would even like have that as a have that as a slogan when it's the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. There are some orders of knighthood that exist for women, but in terms of the big one, which is British knighthood, yeah, you're considered a dame instead of an actual knight.
I feel weird saying that. I feel like I'm my great grandfather when I say that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Sir Brenda Freeze; it would be Lady Brenda Freeze. You could even say Dame Brenda Freeze.
Okay, so it's kind of like Judi Dench, the actor, is Dame Judi Dench, I think. But
Or Lady Judi Dench. However, we're going off topic here and talking about honors of knighthood here.
How many episodes have we done so far in 2015? Is this our second or third?
I'm lost track of that. And to tell you the truth, we did have the...
This is already the funniest episode we've ever done.
We've already had like the year-end recap, so we could easily say this is the third show of 2015. So let's move on to another topic in 2015. That is the Baltimore Orioles.
Hold on. What? Stop the front door here. What?
Yeah, the Baltimore Orioles. We're going to be talking about them on this show right now. Why? Because they made a signing this week, Josh.
Who did they sign?
Tommy Hunter. They avoided arbitration with
him. Oh, that's right. Yeah, one-year deal for Tommy Hunter.
Yep, and even though he lost his closer role at the beginning part of the 2014 season after walking Torii Hunter to get to Miguel Cabrera,
always bring that up when you talk about his outing as a closer.
That was the single outing that ousted him as a closer.
Why don't you stomp on his head while he's drowning, Ray?
But he wasn't drowning. He recovered quite considerably after that. Even though he didn't get the closer role back, he still served his purpose in the bullpen and became quite a force to be reckoned with for the Baltimore Orioles. Yep. But yeah, they avoid arbitration with him. They sign him to a one-year deal. Oh, the Orioles can't sign anybody. Well, they just did right here.
Yep, Tommy Hunter had a 2.90 earned run average at the end of the year. Once again, I guess reoccurring his role as a tough righty out of the bullpen that hurls 100-mile-an-hour fastballs and gets guys out. Also had 12 lead holds, too.
Yeah, of course, you wouldn't be satisfied with that if you're Tommy Hunter, because if you're a pitcher in the big leagues, your ultimate goal is to start. But what do we always say about bullpen guys?
They're failed starters.
Yep.
And that leaves the question for Brian Mattis, who knows what's going to happen with him. And speaking of failed starters, even though I don't want to say failed starter because it seems like this guy always found his way on a starting rotation, guess who's going to be trying out for the Baltimore Orioles in spring training, Ray?
Johan Santana?
No. Mark Hendrickson.
Mark Hendrickson.
41-year-old lefty pitcher, 2 months removed from being a new grandfather, Mark Hendrickson.
Huh.
Wow. The Orioles are going to have a grandpa on their roster, their spring training roster.
All right, I'm blanking on the former pitcher for the Orioles that pitched for the Seattle Mariners until he was like an old man.
Jamie Moyer.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a Jamie Moyer in the works here. If Jamie Moyer can do it, maybe Mark Hendrickson could do it,
but was
right?
Jamie Moyer a grandfather?
I don't think he was a grandfather at that point at 41.
Name me teams that have a grandfather as one of their active players.
I don't know if you would have that at right now at this generation. Maybe the next generation, since people are having kids at younger ages. I don't know. I met a 36-year-old grandmother at one time, remember?
I worked with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A 36-year-old grandmother. So it's not out of the realm
she's still,
of
possibility. She's still beautiful to this day, too.
Yes, she is. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but come on. The grandfather in baseball actively playing. That is a pretty interesting picture, so to speak. But Mark Hendrickson, if he gets a role with the Orioles, it's not going to be starter, Josh.
It's definitely not going to be starter. But can you imagine the jeers if he does bad? Not the cheers, the jeers if he has a bad outing. Hey, Grandpa, get off the mound. You stink.
My grandfather can pitch better than you.
Exactly.
I am a grandfather, you dope.
And he's shaking his fists in the air. It's like, get off my lawn, you young whippersnapper, you.
It's going to be like the whole Chris Jericho thing. Hey, go back to Vancouver.
I'm from Winnipeg, you idiot.
Man. Well, there is your weekly Orioles news for the week, ladies and gentlemen.
Because it is a small blurb, but it is still a blurb.
Still a blurb indeed. But what will not be a blurb, once again, is
our two-minute rants.
And because Ray decided to open last week and I closed last week, I'm going to be the Backstreet Boys to his New Kids on the Block. I'm going to open for him and he's going to close.
Huh? That actually happened?
Yeah, it's a tour. New Kids on the Block and New Kids and Backstreet Boys.
Cared little for both bands, I don't get the reference.
Those guys made a lot of money, Ray. They sold a lot of records.
Which wasn't my money.
Name me bands that sell records anymore. They don't even sell records anymore. They sell singles.
No, they sell records now. You can walk into a Best Buy and get the Black Album. You can get Abbey Road still, a bunch of records. They still sell records.
Well, okay. Well, needless to say, I'm going to start my two-minute rant right about now. Me and Ray normally on this show delve into college football, whether we talk about a weekly game or whether we talk about an off-the-field issue. Yep, I'm looking at you, Jameis Winston. Or we're talking about the playoff system. The one thing we give the NCAA credit for was that they took part in implementing a four-team playoff tournament for the national champion, which seemed to have redeemed the NCAA, redeemed college football, at least for the short term. Now, what the NCAA is considering right now and has totally befuddled me, not just befuddled me, but seems to have enraged me, according to USA Today, a recent article, the NCAA was discussing restoring Joe Paterno's victories to Penn State. If you ask, well, what happened with Joe Paterno? Why were his victories taken away from him? Well, I'll tell you why they were taken away from him. Do you remember a former Penn State defensive coordinator by the name of Jerry Sandusky? Okay, good. Do you remember what Jerry Sandusky was indicted for? Okay, good. Do you know how many children he affected in that indictment case? Quite a lot. And because of that instance, Penn State had to suffer a four-year ineligibility for bowl appearances, which of course got overturned, so now they're back to appearing in bowl games, which I disagree with. And now, the NCAA is considering bringing back Joe Paterno's victories from 1998 to 2011, which were revoked because of this horrific scandal. So basically, the NCAA is telling those victims, you know what, guys? We're sorry for the tragedy that has befallen upon you, but you guys are so 2012, and we need to move on to better things. NCAA, go screw yourselves.
Oh, good grief. All right, well.
What? What did I say?
Go screw yourself? Come on.
Well, I'm not going to curse. I'm going to try to keep it family friendly.
No, I'm saying why say it in the first place?
I don't know. Just,
all right, well, I
disagree with it. I
disagree on the lifting of the bowl ban. I think that, on lifting of the bowl ban, your disagreeance of it. I think that, they shouldn't
stick with the punishments.
They shouldn't punish the players that are there right now and the coaches that had nothing to do with it.
Stick by your guns.
All right, well, okay. A wise man once said, I am not a role model. Just because I dunk a basketball doesn't mean that I should raise your kids. That wise man's name was Charles Barkley. He said this many, many years ago, and it rings today. The reason being is because a few weeks ago, John Bones Jones, the UFC light heavyweight champion, took on a former Olympian, Daniel Cormier. It was a fight. John Bones Jones won. The guy has proved his dominance in the UFC, and everyone's like worshiping the ground this guy's walking on. Except a few days later, he announces that he's entering into a drug rehab facility. Why? Because he failed a drug test by the Nevada Athletic State Commission, and therefore he had to check into a drug rehab facility. And sure enough, he only spent a day in that rehab facility. Here you had John Bones Jones, a guy everybody was worshiping a day before, all of a sudden has become a fallen hero, so to speak. But at the same time, I couldn't help but look at that and follow Charles Barkley's quote of, "I am not a role model." I, meaning that athletes in general, should not be the ones dictating how your kid should think, act, and speak. Yes, they are in the public eye. Yes, they have a certain image to live up to. But history has dictated that these guys just cannot live up to that image of being put up on a pedestal. It's not a new thing, guys. I mean, the Black Sox scandal, Pete Rose gambling on baseball, he's still blacklisted from the Hall of Fame. Lawrence Taylor with his drug issues in the 90s, it's become a recurring theme here that athletes are not role models, and John Bones Jones is the latest proof of that.
Yeah, I do hope he gets the treatment that he needs, and whether he's taking it for recreation or whether he's taking it to gain an athletic edge, I just don't see why he would need that. But needless to say, it's a weird state of an era we're living in terms of pharmaceutical uses, drug uses, and you would be surprised what people are using stuff for nowadays.
But believe it or not, statistically, cocaine usage has gone down considerably since the 80s.
It should have died in the 80s. It just never seemed to have went out.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, going back to the fact that athletes, role models, and everything like that, a lot of these athletes, they come from certain backgrounds that you would say to yourself, that's a little interesting. But at the same time, they also have to take leaps and bounds to get to where they get to. And they do some things that they're not proud of. And you want to become like Jay-Z, or you want to become like the next Michael Jordan?
That's one in a million.
Yeah, that's what Stephen A. Smith said. It's one in a million. One in a billion, he actually said. And that is 100% true. Look up to your parents as a role model. Don't look up to somebody who you don't even know, who you only see glorified on television under fancy lights and fancy editing and fancy highlights. You're only seeing that part of them. You're not seeing the dark gritty behind them. You're not seeing Jacoby Jones get hit over the head with a bottle by Sweet Pea.
Really?
Yes, I had to bring that up.
Oh,
we'll end the show on that note, ladies and gentlemen. What are we talking about next week?
Well, next week I will have to edit the new title of my blog. Of course, I got to find a title for it. But it won't be Monday Sports Mornings with Josh anymore, since can't really get it on Mondays anymore. Also, get some Ravens news in. Obviously, me and Ray are going to be talking about the 2015 free agency and who needs to stay, who must go, and, of course, name some more lists we have to come up with over the next several weeks. Pro Bowl? Do we talk Pro Bowl?
We'll talk about their football games.
Yeah, we'll talk about the football games. Let's talk about the high-scoring games, see if Vegas won a lot of money or they lost a lot of money. Yeah, we don't talk betting much on this show here, folks.
No,
we're not gamblers.
I did bring up Pete Rose.
I play Keno once in a while, but that's no.
This has been another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I'm Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall.
We will see you all.